the steadfast love of the Lord endures forever. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. And therefore, I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him. To the soul who seeks him, it is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It's Lamentations chapter 3, verses 22 and 26. Silence and quietness are very biblical ideas, are very biblical concepts to have. Oftentimes, silence is associated with wisdom in the Bible. We can see in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 28, it says, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's deemed intelligent. And that goes along with what we read in James, the motif of your tongue being a spark that's able to set the entire world aflame, and that it's better to watch your tongue and to remain silent rather than abuse your words. In silence, we see a potential for a closeness to God. We see in Jesus' ministry all the time that he goes off by himself in solitude and in silence to provide an environment that fosters a relationship with God. Silence is very, very biblical. But from a more human perspective, silence is also very, very uncomfortable. Without speaking for the first minute that I stood here, I don't know if anybody felt more nervous than I did, and I was really uncomfortable. And I think that just goes along with humanity tends to feel very comfortable with noise. That the more that's going on, the more we can use our sense of hearing to process what's going on around us, the more comfortable we can feel with our environment. A good example that I have that kind of illustrates this, I think, is Interface. I've been an Interface leader the past 2 years, and then I was in it 3 years ago, and it's one of my favorite weeks of the entire school year. I absolutely love it, but it's the most uncomfortable thing for just about everybody. And you get 200, 300 people in one room, don't know each other at all, and the enemy is silence. You want everyone in that room to be able to talk to each other. You want that buzz of chatter going on, because when people are talking, they're communicating and they're building relationships with each other. Being an Interface the past couple of years, and then also being a youth intern at the Madison Church of Christ last summer and Owl Hollow 2 summers ago, I built up a little repertoire of icebreaker questions, because when it gets silent and when it gets uncomfortable, it's always nice to ask a silly question that breaks the silence, gets people talking again, makes more noise, and puts us back in our comfort zone. I'd like to share one of my favorite icebreaker questions that I ask. I was actually talking with a friend just the other day, and this came up in conversation. But one of my favorite icebreakers is, what is your last first thing that you've done? And I love that for the time of life that we're at. What is the last first thing that you've done? Especially for the college age, it's such a life-changing experience just going to college. The 18 to 22 range there is just full of so many firsts and so many first things, and so you tend to get a lot of interesting questions with that, and I'd like to answer that one real quick tonight, because my last first was this past weekend, and it was pretty interesting in my life. I had the blessing of going to Evansville, Indiana, with several great, great friends of mine, and we went to a festival, and I'm still not 100% sure what the festival was about, if it was supposed to be a food festival or just a Go Indiana festival. I don't really know. But they had a lot of food stands there, and one of them sold brains. And so I thought it'd be neat. I got in line. I paid $6.50 for a brain sandwich, and it wasn't a human brain, don't worry. I think it was pig, but they didn't really say anywhere. And honestly, it tasted like two good pieces of bread with a very soggy piece of bread in the middle. It didn't taste good. The texture was real gross. But this past weekend was the first time that I've had brain, and so that was my last first. But in reality, that's a really silly question to ask. And most icebreakers that you ask, I've heard, if you could be reincarnated into an odor, what would that be? A lot of times, they're ridiculous. And it shows how far we're willing to go to talk about absolutely nothing so that we don't have to sit in silence. I think another example of where silence can be very, very uncomfortable is on a first date. I can't tell you the number of times I've been on a first date with a girl, and, well, always a girl. I said that from behind a pulpit. And so I'm on the first date, and I always want there to be noise. I always want there to be words going back and forth. And whenever there's silence, it's usually because I'm trying to think of what to say next, so then there's not silence. And silence is definitely the enemy sometimes. And sometimes it can be very, very uncomfortable as well. Who's heard the words, "We need to talk"? Because the couple of seconds of silence right after those are always very, very uncomfortable moments. But we see that quietness and silence is such a biblical concept, and that it's such a necessity in our lives. And I really feel like quietness is something that I haven't had a whole lot of this past semester in particular. I'm busier than I've ever been, and don't get me wrong, I love every bit of it. But I cannot thank Ray enough for picking this theme for this semester, because unplugging, especially unplugging from busyness, is something that I really needed to hear several great lessons on. But now we're moving out of the unplugging segment of this semester, and we're talking about quietness, and today was a day of all days for me to get a moment of quietness. Let me tell you, midterm week was last week, but for some reason, my professors decided to make midterm week this week for me. And so today I had two midterms. I'm speaking at Devo in the Dark later on tonight, and I love all of that, and that's above all the current responsibilities that I have, and I love every bit of it, don't get me wrong, but it's a lot sometimes, and especially with this lesson, because I can't tell you how much I value this opportunity. I do want to thank Ray, as I'm sure everyone does every week, for this opportunity, and really get across how important this is to me. I remember sitting as a freshman, looking up at the people speaking and thinking how much of a leader they were on this campus, and now it's kind of terrifying that there might be several misguided freshmen thinking the same thing about me. But all day long, I've been so excited for this. I've thought so much about this, and it's really been kind of on my heart and on my mind. And part of that has led to a very, very busy day, at the very least in my mind, a very, very busy day. And so I really could have used a good moment of sitting down in quietness and in silence. And so we see that there are clearly two different types of silence, a biblical silence, that's necessary for our lives, and then also this uncomfortable silence that we experience as humans so much. And I want to take a quick second and kind of distinguish the two different types of silences before we move on, because there is that biblical silence that we need. And I think instead of describing it as silence, a great word for that is quietness. Because it's not so much not hearing anything as much as it is being still and knowing our God. And emptying ourselves out of the busyness and of the things that we fill our own lives with, and having that be filled with God to the point where we overflow, that is a biblical quietness. And the bad, uncomfortable silence that we experience, I feel like we do because it's not true silence. Those moments, especially the "we need to talk" moment, it's not silent in the sense of there are no words. While that is true, there's so much going on in our minds. Our minds become so busy, they become so anxious, trying to figure out, well, what's this person going to say? What's the best case? What's the worst case? How do I prepare for that? What do I say back? And our minds are going a million miles a minute, trying to figure out what to do. And in silence, we can fill that with inner turmoil to the point where it's not silent here. And that's what's so uncomfortable about it, is when we're worried about ourselves and the impression that we're making and other people's judgments of us. But tonight, the point of what we're talking about isn't going to be man's silence. It's going to be the silence of God. But I want to get across those two different ideas of man's silence and kind of put a pin in both of those real quick, because we can understand God's traits so much more by understanding a little bit more about how those traits are in our lives. Turning your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 11 through 13. This is what Nate Sullivan read for us. I haven't known Nate for very long, but he's already one of my dearest friends, and I'm so appreciative to him for being able to help out with this lesson. And I can say the same thing for Ben Hogan. There's no one that I trust more to open us out in prayer. Nathan Woolard was my interface leader my freshman year, and there's no one whose song leading I enjoy more. And Nathan Diller is going to close us in prayer tonight. He's my roommate and my best friend. And so for you guys who helped me out tonight, I really do want to appreciate each and every one of you individually. I love you all. But let's read 1 Kings chapter 19, 11 through 13. It says, "And he said, 'Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord, And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the quake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak, and he went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him that said, "What are you doing, Elijah?" Elijah felt alone and abandoned by God. And I want to pause real fast and ask, do you feel that way tonight? In your life, whatever's been happening, whatever's been going on, do you feel like you're alone and abandoned by God? Because if you do, that's okay. Not that being abandoned by God is okay. By no means is that okay. But feeling that way is natural. Oftentimes, as Christians, we have this Bible and we know the answers and that we know that God is with us and He won't abandon us. And we get to this point where we feel abandoned regardless of it. And then we feel bad because we feel abandoned and we know that we shouldn't. And I want to reassure you all tonight with Elijah. Because in the chapter just before this one, Elijah has God perform, because of Elijah's words, one of the most amazing miracles recorded in the Bible. That there are 500 prophets of Baal all praying for days for their false god to light a burnt offering and to burn that in the name of Baal. And after days and days of cutting themselves and of praying to their false god, it doesn't work. And then Elijah, in a matter of moments, soaks his offering in water, digs a moat around it and fills it with water, and calls God to bring fire down, and he consumes the entire altar. And so we see Elijah performing these great miracles through God. And then in this chapter, where do we find him? He's in a cave by himself, asking for the Lord to take his life. That Elijah feels so alone and abandoned that he feels like there's nothing left. He is asking for God to take his life away. We have the Bible today, but Elijah had the confidence and the conviction that comes from seeing a miracle of God, performing a miracle of God. And so because Elijah can go from that high, from that confidence to that low so quickly, I feel like it's safe to say we can feel fine with those feelings of abandonment. And those need to be dealt with. We need to find that closeness with God again. But compounding that feeling with a feeling of guilt on top of it is not going to be productive. And I love how God chooses to comfort Elijah. That we see that he's feeling alone. We see that he's feeling just down in the dumps, having this horrible, horrible time. And God chooses to reveal himself to Elijah, not in the noise, not in the wind, the quake, or the fire. He reveals himself to Elijah in the whisper. I want to read 1 Kings 11 through 12 one more time and firmly drive home this point that's being made, because this is the illustration that's going to stick with us the rest of the lesson. It says, "And he said, 'Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord.' And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And a great earthquake came and shook the rocks, but the Lord was not in the quake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak, went out, stood at the entrance of the cave. And there came a voice and said, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?'" I want to ask you tonight, what is your noise? What is the noise that's in your life? Looking at Elijah's story here, God didn't speak through the noise. He didn't speak through these great miraculous works that Elijah had seen previously in his life. He didn't speak through that. Elijah had to wait through the miraculous and wait through the big and wait through the noise to hear his whisper. What's your noise? Are you going through trials right now? Is your life falling apart in places and you don't understand why a loved one is hurting or why you're hurting and there's just so much noise coming from that? Is it from a relationship where you're second-guessing everything that you're saying, everything that you're doing? You feel like things are your fault and maybe it's not something that you should be in? Is the noise coming from a sin that's in your life that refuses to get out of your life, that makes a disconnect between you and God? What is that noise in your life? Whatever the noise is, God has a whisper underneath it. His presence is soft and is constant in your life. And once you look past the noise, you can see what he desires from you. I want to get personal because I don't know how to be up here and share a lesson without sharing myself. And for those who know me, for those who hear me speak, sometimes I want to preface this by saying I don't always talk about my mom and about my family when I'm given a speaking opportunity. But there are times where a lesson topic sets it up to a point where I would feel inconsiderate not using an example from my life that fits so perfectly with a point that's being made. For those who don't know, my parents married in 83, and my mom was a great mother. Her name is Rosemary, and she's just as beautiful as her name is. And in 2002, after several years of her being a very good mother, she became an alcoholic and spiraled more quickly than I could have imagined. The next 8 years were consumed with struggles to try and fix that from my dad's perspective, try to get her through it and work with her through rehab, through hospitals, and eventually ended in divorce in 2010. After he felt there was nothing that he could do besides that to keep his children safe. In 2012, my mom had a car accident that luckily she wasn't hurt too terribly in, but ruined her car, had a breathalyzer. She spent Christmas in jail over the course of a month. In 2003, she lost her job. And then last year, in 2014, after hitting one of the lowest points she's hit, she was in a hospital with no home, with no car, with nothing at all. And was finally given an opportunity by an elder at the church that I grew up at to go through a rehab program. And so she lasted 115 days in this program. It was one of the brightest points of her life. And I remember it was this time last year that she was going through this, and it was the very first day of this spring semester that I got the call that she had relapsed. And so in that meantime, she's relapsed and has gone through, I think, 12 different living arrangements, has gone through 7 different jobs, goes to a temporary work agency whenever they will select her to work for a single day so that she can have enough money to eat and then enough money to continue drinking. That she's currently, to my knowledge, has nowhere to stay, doesn't have a home, used to sleep in her car. And this summer in particular, the couple months of this summer, were the absolute worst of her entire life. That she had her car impounded and was completely alone, felt completely abandoned, was subject to being attacked and being robbed, and over the summer was raped. And I debated with myself a lot if I was going to get up here and actually talk about that, actually get those points across with how awful it has gotten in her life. Because part of me didn't want to, and part of me didn't think that it was necessary, but the point that I want to get across is that this has been going on for 13 years, and she has been a Christian every step of the way. That every single day for 13 years, I have prayed to God to be in her life and to take the addiction out of it. And that every single day for 13 years, I know other people have prayed. And I know that she's prayed and she's read her Bible. And no matter how much biblical counsel I give her, no matter how much I pray, no matter how much she prays, no matter how much all of you pray, because so many of you have prayed for her, God has stayed silent in this situation since it started. And I don't know what the pain is in your life, what you see that noise from, but sometimes our lives get so obscured with pain and with hurt and with trials and with sin that we're making so much noise and we don't know what else to do besides quote David in Psalms 22 when he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry to you in the daytime, but you do not hear. And in the night, I find no rest. And we're so consumed with hurt or pain or doubt or relationships or sin or all of these things that we've been focusing on this semester to unplug from. We get so consumed by it that we're making so much noise about it in our head that we forget to take a step back and hear the whisper. What does your whisper say? Mine would say something like this. Your mother is not your fault. You've done what you can. You focus on me and on your holiness. You are loved and you are forgiven. What does your whisper say? When you take a step back, when you quit making noise in your mind, and when you quit buying into the noise outside of your mind, what does your whisper say? Does it tell you that you have a sin in your life that's separating you from God, that you need to remove from your life? Does your whisper tell you that you're ready for baptism? And that while you tell yourself, I need to wait until I'm ready, that in all reality, you know who Jesus Christ is, what he's done for you, and what the meaning of baptism is. Does your whisper tell you that there is love and that there is forgiveness in Christ with Christians here? And is covered up by the noise of embarrassment of coming forward or any number of things that could stop that whisper. In a moment, Nathan Woolard's going to come back and lead us in an invitation song. But before he does that, we're going to take a minute and we're going to sit in silence. And I beg each and every one of you, look past the noise in your life and hear the whisper. If there's anything that whisper tells you that you need from this congregation, whether it's to come forward in baptism, to come forward in repentance, or to come forward asking for prayers, if that whisper so encourages you, please take advantage of that opportunity. Look past the noise and hear your whisper.